I'm Carson Sestouli of Fangraphs.com, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, brought to you by Homestand Sports. It is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, and I am Carson Sestouli. Joining me is not longtime co-host Dave Cameron, because Dave Cameron no longer works for Fangraphs.com. Indeed, he is now a part of the research and development team with the San Diego Padres. In his stead this week, someone who's appeared already on previous episodes and is a much superior co-host, it is Travis Sawchuk of Fangraphs.com, of Big Data Baseball, formerly of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and perhaps in the future, likely in the future, author of The Makeover Machine with the Ringer's Ben Lindbergh. Travis Sawchuk, are you there?
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good. I'm glad it is. What you know about this, Travis Sawchuk, is that it's called the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. Pitch Talks are a name used for a type of event that is facilitated by Homestand Sports. And these sorts of events will get people together, gathering to talk about baseball, perhaps to have adult sodas, etc. There is one coming up, Travis. There is a Pitch Talks event coming up. It's Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame Night.
Ooh.
June 14th, just about 2 weeks away. June 14th, 6 to 9 p.m. June 14th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Rec Room in Toronto. Hey, guess who will be there? I'll tell you. Dan Schulman.
Okay.
Dan Schulman, and also a couple of Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame inductees, including not only former Blue Jays player Lloyd Mosby, but also Pedro Martinez. Pedro Martinez will be there. What did I say? Pitch Talks? What did I say? Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame Night, 6 to 9 p.m., 6 to 9 p.m., 6 to 9 p.m., June 14th, Thursday, June 14th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Rec Room. I think I've sufficiently covered it, yeah?
Yeah, that sounds like a great event.
You've been to one of those before?
I have, in Pittsburgh. I had a great time.
Yeah. You got a lot of people coming up to you afterwards, say, Travis Sawchuk, you're one of my favorites.
No, but I did have someone come up and ask if Carson would be there.
Oh. At the event? He was.
He was pretty disappointed you would not be there.
Homestand.ca. Yeah. Homestand.ca/events if you want to be very specific about it. Although no need to do that. What we do here on the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, Travis Sawchuk, is to provide dispassionate analysis, much in the way we might at Fangraphs.com, specifically for the Toronto Blue Jays. And the way it frequently starts out, Travis, is I talk about the recent performance of the team. In this case, one finds, looking at the most recent, say, 2 weeks for the Toronto Blue Jays, the team is, I think it's 3-10 over the last 13 games, the last 2 weeks. 3-10. Now you might say, well, that's not particularly good for their standings. You're right. Your suspicions are confirmed in this case, Travis Sawchuk. In the last 2 weeks, the team's probability of making the playoffs has declined by roughly 10 percentage points. Down now to 6.5%, which also places them, they've dropped over 30 percentage points since the beginning of the year. 30 percentage points since the beginning of the year. That's not very good. Things have gone south. Things have gone south for the team. you might not be surprised to know that the play on either side of the ball has not been particularly good for the last 2 weeks. Travis Sawchuk, the Toronto hitters, Toronto field position players, have produced the 28th best WAR, which is also similar to the third worst figure over the past couple weeks. And the pitchers, not a great improvement over that. The 26th best WAR, or you might also call that the fifth worst WAR among all groups. It's been a real challenge for these Toronto Blue Jays over the past couple weeks. Not ideal. Curtis Granderson, Kevin Pillar, Teoscar Hernandez, Luke Maley and Russell Martin combining for a negative win between them.
Mm.
More than a negative win, which is not the direction in which you'd like to go.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Not at all. And really, with the exception of Justin Smoke, I guess, they haven't been particularly good. Ian Jervis Larte, perhaps, has been okay. And then on the pitching side, J-Hap continues to distinguish himself, missing more bats than ever before, using his high fastball approach. Anyway, Travis, me telling you about these last couple weeks and where the team now sits in terms of postseason probability, and also looking at this calendar, which says, as we're recording today, it says May 31st. Do you have any hints of any questions I might ask you? Is in particular because we spoke about it at some length before recording this episode?
I do have some hints. I have some ideas.
Yeah, would you like to float anything at the moment?
Yeah. I think the Blue Jays need to start viewing the season through a sober lens. Mm-hmm. And they're in an unforgiving neighborhood, as all Blue Jay fans are aware. As we record this, they're 14 games behind the Red Sox. They're 12 games behind the Yankees, who are in the number one wild card spot. And as we record this, the Mariners are 33-22. So the Blue Jays are, 8.5 out of that second wild card at the moment. And you mentioned the playoff odds. They've taken a hit, and it's beginning to seem more and more like the focus should be on tomorrow rather than today. And tomorrow's exciting with we were talking about the double-A infield they have, and Vladimir Guerrero, his son is a top prospect, and raking. So you begin to look at the future core and thinking more about building around them than the present core, which is probably not going to, I would imagine it's not going to be together too much longer. So, I think the Blue Jays are in a position where they could flip a Donaldson, a J-Hap, and get decent returns and really have an eye on several seasons down the road. Because as we've seen with some of the teams that have had recent success, you have to accept your position and the probabilities of success. And if they're low, accept that and play for tomorrow.
Hey, so let me ask you, I'm putting you on the spot a bit because I don't know that you've performed any sort of real study of this. However, now, we're saying that given their place in the standings at the moment, it would make sense for the Blue Jays to sell. However, if they won, say, 15 straight, obviously that would put them in a markedly different position, right? So
that's
my question
true.
To you is at what time, you could also just use this from having been an observer of the game, an interested observer, from having covered a team, you covered the Pirates for some time. What's like the, it's not really a break-even point, but what's the point at which the hand is forced, do you suppose?
They'll probably want to wait a little longer, but in some ways I think the second wild card is almost disincentivized playing for a wild card. Because now you're not playing for, you're of course not really gaining entrance in the postseason. You're having to play a play-in game. And I just don't know. Even if the Blue Jays went on a tear and they won 15 in a row, I still think Yankees or Red Sox win that division. And then you're playing for the right to try to probably play whoever doesn't win the division between the Yankees and Red Sox in a one-game playoff. And that's how much do you want to invest in that? And I think that's a best-case scenario. So,
it's also not so much how much do you want to invest, it's how much do you want to, how much are you willing to lose out on?
Right. And there is something to be said to, at times, being the first to the market. We saw the Rays and Mariners execute a trade last week, and maybe the trading season opens a little earlier this year, who knows? But you don't want to be necessarily the last one standing and not having moved your assets if you want to be a seller. So I think urgency and being proactive in the situation could benefit the Blue Jays.
Now, you mentioned not wanting to invest or in a wild card or, I guess, take great risks by retaining, in this case, pretty valuable assets like Josh Donaldson and Jay Happ, simply to qualify for a one-game play-in. And that makes sense to me. It also, it seems to be that, in particular, the relatively new playoff format has changed the ways that teams approach not only the trade deadline, but also the beginning of the year. And so there's a different sort of relationship. Because we spoke, you and I, and owing quite a bit to Fangraph's Craig Edwards, we spoke at the beginning of the season about the pretty excellent moves that the Toronto Blue Jays had made by acquiring players like Andrew Solarte, Aledmys Diaz, Curtis Granderson, without having to spend a lot of money, they were able to acquire some pieces that were of some legitimate help to the team, or appeared as though they would be of some legitimate help to the team, building up around a core that was somewhat costly and would be difficult to move, or would be, maybe imprudent to move, like in the case of a Josh Donaldson, for example, who, as long as he remains relatively healthy, is going to have quite a bit of value to teams. Do you see what I'm saying, though? At the beginning of the year, it makes sense to shoot for that one game play-in.
Sure.
But then if it seems like it's not going to happen, it also seems like there's not a lot of cause to invest too much in trying to get it to happen.
Yeah, I think that's true. And as you mentioned, we discussed that earlier, and the Blue Jays were kind of like the Twins, where they go into the season looking at this environment where there's some super teams in the AL and the Astros, Yankees, Red Sox, if they get some breaks. Indians were the number one seed in the playoffs a year ago. And then they look at a number of rebuilding clubs, basically almost the entire AL Central. And they say, hey, there's an opportunity here to sneak into a wild card spot. And they made some improvements at a relatively low cost, and some of them have worked out, others have not. And health hasn't really been on their side, and health was an issue going into this year. And so I think that was a prudent tact where, man, try to get better in the offseason at a low cost. Don't overinvest, but if there's an opportunity to maybe sneak in, and now that opportunity's not looking so great. So you have to be flexible and be nimble in this two wild card era, I think, is important. And we could see the Blue Jays play both preseason buyer and in-season seller this year.
Now, when teams are at the deadline, when they're making deadline sell-offs, I have to imagine that they usually have some kind of target date for a return to, contention, right? And we've seen a couple different models. Some teams will, get the sort of lower-level prospects with a great deal of upside. This preseason, we saw from the Pittsburgh Pirates, we saw them trade away two real assets, or certainly one real one in Gerrit Cole, and certainly a potential asset in Andrew McCutchen, for a pretty large collection of near MLB ready or MLB ready minor league talent.
Right, right.
Which spoke to, it seems like the intention of competing, somewhat in the present. Now, I'm curious what you think of the Blue Jays timetable, and it would seem as though there are two opposing forces, right? On the one hand, you have that crop of prospects down at AA. They're all pretty young. Kevin Biggio is a little bit older than Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero, but, they all have, a full complement of cost-controlled years ahead of them. But then you have whatever remains of Troy Tulowitzki. You have Russell Martin next year. Kendrys Morales is signed through next year. Now, that's not necessarily a great core around which to work. But then there's right. also Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez. Stroman is not a free agent until 2021. And Aaron Sanchez is in the same situation too, and Kevin Pillar is also in that situation. So that would be 2020 would be the last year through which they're all signed. So I guess what do you think about a timetable for the Blue Jays, or is it a necessary consideration?
Yeah, it is, and I think Pillar, Stroman, Sanchez are probably a few of the players on this team that could be part of that could surround that next core for the next competitive Blue Jays team, so you might want to be careful excuse me, moving them. But I think the majority of this roster is not going to be Teoscar Hernandez, but the majority of these guys are probably not going to be around for multiple seasons or part of the next division contending club. So it makes sense, I think, to try to sell as many of those pieces off as you can. And then if you could... you mentioned the Pirates return. Maybe it makes sense to look for more major league ready assets in return. And Guerrero Jr. certainly ready to hit. Number the whole AA infield is impressive. So Yeah, maybe the turnaround doesn't have to be such a long drought, and you can accelerate it with more MLB-ready prospects. But I do think the time has come to to shed some of these guys who are not going to be part of that, who are probably not going to play with Guerrero Jr. for many years, who are not going to be part of that that next core.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's probably not a lot more to dwell on at this point because it just simply requires more games to be decided. At this point, it seems as though teams unlikely to threaten much for postseason spot. But there's still, 2 months until the trade deadline at this point. So we can revisit it in a subsequent conversation. I did want to bring up another interesting point, and it has to do both with an article you wrote recently, not necessarily about the Blue Jays, but the other sort of relevant data point here is Russell Martin and the way that he's been deployed by the team. I mean, I suppose off and on throughout his stay with the Blue Jays, but perhaps most notably in recent days with him making appearances at positions simply beyond catcher, right? I think he's played 9 innings at shortstop. He's made an appearance in left field, which I guess is, and he's also played some third base, which is a novelty on the one hand, but there's perhaps some real utility to it. But first of all, let's reverse. You wrote an article about platoon advantages in catchers. And that's where this kind of starts. So could you provide a sort of summary of that to provide us some context for how we might look at Russell Martin and a way to use him?
Sure. As all the listeners are aware, I'm sure platooning's become a big part of everyday baseball lineup construction and in-game decisions. But a few positions have been sort of neglected as far as platoon advantage goes. And one of them, among all non-pitchers, catchers come to bat with the lowest platoon advantage of all major league positions, and that is they face opposite-handed pitchers the lowest percentage. I think it's about 41%. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It's hard to find left-handed hitting catchers who are competent hitters, or left-handed hitting catchers who are competent hitters. Managers are afraid of substituting pinch hitting for a catcher and then having the backup succumb to injury. So there are a number of reasons behind this, and they seem practical, pragmatic, but we look at the Houston Astros, and they've been carrying 3 catchers, including Evan Gattis, who caught more last year, and they're one of the teams who has inched above enjoying platoon advantage more than 50% of the time, a catcher, and in this day and age where every team is looking to extract every amount of value, no matter how small, it is a position that I think could be... There's more utility to be had there, and maybe the backup catcher should be called upon more to try to gain platoon advantage late in games. Teams should focus on creating platoons there more with a third catcher or not. And I guess we arrive at Russell Martin because he's an interesting case, as you mentioned, where he's almost become a catcher-slash-utility player. He has to be the only catcher this year who has played shortstop and catcher in the same game. He's played in left, I think third, second. Has he played second base? He's played all over the place.
Probably could, yeah.
And it is interesting to see how the Blue Jays are maximizing. It helps them maximize their 25-man roster, which are being further squeezed by bullpen specialization and more innings being absorbed by the bullpen. So bullpens have taken up more and more roster spots. So you need more flexibility within your position player group.
It seems as though having a player like this could be a real advantage because managers are typically, as you've noted with regard to the platoon advantage, a lot of the times that has to do with the fact that managers are hesitant to pinch hit for a catcher. Typically, catchers are not particularly great hitters. And yet, despite that fact, teams are managers still reluctant to pitch hit for them because if you bring in your backup, then that leaves you with no sort of safety net. I don't know if you mentioned the Astros by name or not, but the presence of Evan Gattis on that team, who can catch, he's not necessarily a great catcher relative to other catchers, but relative to most typical field players, he's markedly better, right? Because he has quite a bit of experience at the position. The Dodgers have Austin Barnes, who has played games both at second base and at catcher this year. The Dodgers also have Kyle Farmer in their system, who can play third base in addition to catcher. Now, a lot of catchers at the prospect level, if they don't stick at that position, then they move down to first base, because maybe one of the reasons they're at catcher is because they're not particularly athletic. But we do have here, we've sort of named a group of players who have some catching skills but can be deployed elsewhere. But there's a huge advantage, right? Because if you have a guy, you know, say Russell Martin starts for you at third base, if you want to pinch hit for your catcher, then you still have this backup in the game. So there's always that sort of that safety net still exists.
Right. And the Blue Jays are doing some of that, and the Dodgers sort of have the younger Russell Martin, Austin Barnes. I'd say to have a player like that is a competitive edge. And I wonder, you mentioned sort of the catchers that are forced, that can hit but have to move down the spectrum. Maybe in the future there's a greater need for those players, as sometimes in that Evan Gattis role where they're sometimes a third catcher, sometimes a DH, sometimes a first baseman. Maybe you can hide them in a corner outfield spot. But just in a general sense, versus the need for flexibility keeps increasing. But catcher, because of the specialized nature of the position, has sort of been immune to being asked to do multiple things on the field, where every other position almost is. I think we were mentioning earlier today that there's probably more position players that come in to pitch during a season than there are coming to catch, non-catchers catching. So I think it speaks to some opportunity there to do some creative things.
Right, and a player like Martin is, I recognize he hasn't had a particularly great season this year, but the projections are still relatively optimistic that he'll return to at least within shouting distance of league average offensively. So if he were able to be able to do that while catching, but also to be able to make appearances at other positions along the way. Again, this might be something, though, that's maybe kind of more the consideration of a team like the Astros that has real designs on competing and has the roster to do that, as opposed to, I mean, do you think it's maybe lost on a team like the Blue Jays a little bit, where the extra, you know, the extra flexibility for the manager maybe is there's less utility there because the rest of the roster is not strong enough to keep them competitive in the division.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to trade Russell Martin to the Astros. Right.
Seems like it'd be, yeah.
I think the other question is, you know, Martin's been regarded as a really above average framer like almost every year of his career. Do you really want to take that out from behind the plate as often as they have? I'm not sure, but he's an interesting guy. He started as an infielder. He's a good athlete. I think the other thing that this should tell us is that if you find not all catchers are poor athletes. Many of them are probably very good athletes. And many of them, like Martin, might have begun at other positions. I'm not sure where Austin Barnes began, but maybe Barnes and Martin will allow managers to just think a little more openly and creatively about who can actually go behind the plate and who can go from behind the plate and into a third base position and that sort of thing. I guess the other consideration is there's a lot fewer balls being put in play in this high strikeout era. I think it's like, compared to a decade earlier, it's like 20% fewer balls in play, and that's true of most positions. So you can, if you want to play Barnes or Martin in an infield position, you can get away with a little more than you could 10 years ago because there's less chance they're even going to be involved in a play.
What I'd like to do now, Travis Sochek, besides thank you for your for the excellence of your insights, is to turn our gaze to the near future to see who the Toronto Blue Jays will be playing in that near future. Here's what I'd like to inform you, first of all. If indeed the Blue Jays do have designs on competing this year, and or if they're ever going to go on some sort of extended winning streak or at least a beneficial run, this might be the time to do it. Starting June 1st, The team plays, out of four series, they play three teams in the Tigers, the Orioles, and the Rays that are expected to have rest of season winning percentages of, you know, roughly 45% or lower. So they're all some sort of situation there to be taken advantage of. The first series is against is at the Detroit Tigers, and there we see Blaine Hardy, Matt Boyd, and Michael Fulmer. What's perhaps less interesting than any of those specific matchups, and or the chances of the Blue Jays beating them, which is all roughly, you know, 50%, is the fact that the Detroit Tigers may or may not be the team that the Blue Jays most resemble after this year. but I'm wondering, if you were to perform a bit of comparing and contrasting Blue Jays versus Tigers, what do you see there?
Well, I as far as a long-term view,
because, I mean, the Tigers were a team, right, that had some older players.
Right.
Well-compensated older players, and then, but not much around it. The Blue Jays, I suppose, are in sort of that that area too. Although they have probably more of a farm than those Tigers.
They do, and that's a Blue Jays' great advantage. Where you know, the Tigers were going to have to rebuild whether they chose to or not. They're just getting older, and they didn't have a strong farm system. Where the Blue Jays do have some of the best minor league assets in the game, and so if they choose to retool a little sooner than the Tigers did and choose to get some value in return before players lose more value or they're out of team control, they can be in a much better place than the Tigers are today. So I think that's another point in getting ahead of this. The longer the wait, the longer the Blue Jays wait to sell, the lower the value of returns hypothetically becomes as players lose team control and they become older. So, don't become the Tigers.
So the Tigers, they could be a type of near future for the Blue Jays, but again, they just did not have the sort of high end talent already in their system, which I think, as you suggest, should expedite the Blue Jays any of their attempt to rebuild.
Yeah. So they could look like the Tigers at the major league level next year, which, you know, is never what you want to hear as a fan of a club, but. Beneath that, or maybe Guerrero Jr.'s up before then. I don't know. But beneath that is a lot more talent than the Tigers entered this season with, and that's the exciting thing. Unfortunately, baseball's become this game where front offices. I guess it's unfortunate if you want to see more competitive teams, but front offices are, if they're not going to be playoff competitive teams, are going to try to become a playoff competitive team down the road, and that often means selling and. Not spending, you know. The Astros did this. The Cubs did it, and they've won the last two World Series, and they're a model to follow now. And I think the Blue Jays are probably. My guess is they will be on some sort of track like that. Maybe not to the degree of the Disastros, but a dip to bounce back.
Travis Sautrick, what I'd like to do is tell you that you fulfilled your obligation to the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, and also to say thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure to speak with you again. Once again, that is Travis Sautrick of Fangraphs.com, author of Big Data Baseball, future author of a book tentatively titled The Makeover Machine with the Ringers, Ben Lindbergh. I'm Carson Sestouli, and this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast.